Hey there, it's Will O'Callaghan here from Off The Ball, and before you dive into this podcast, here's one you're going to want to stick in your diary. This coming Friday, Apple Green's annual 24/7 event is back, and for just one day only, they've got loads of brilliant offers across their stores. You can pick up a chicken fillet roll or a breakfast roll for just €2.47, have a car wash for €2.47, or grab a packet of Tato crisps for just 24 cent. There are some great food offers too. You've got Whoppers, selected 6-inch Subway sandwiches, Taco Bell beefy melt burritos, and Chopstick small bite boxes, all available for, you guessed it, €2.47. It's only happening this Friday, so don't miss out. Head along to your local Apple Green store and make the most of these fantastic one-day-only offers. Terms and conditions do apply. And now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball, GAA.
Look, I said it there a while ago, this place, what to do for people across the country, really. You know, you talk about the kids, but the support to give families as well and parents.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Enda, good morning.
Good morning.
Matthew, greetings.
Hello, Colm.
I mentioned him there as a segment, but he's also here in a special guest co-host capacity. It's the former Roscommon captain, two-time Connacht champ himself, Donny Smith. Donny, good morning. How are you?
Good, how are
you? You well?
All good.
We get straight into it?
Go for it.
Kerry or Mayo?
And then the show ends.
One word, Kerry.
I was, expecting that. I was saying to the lads there during the week, it's like, oh, we're not in danger here of this being the Galway hurlers for the Mayo footballers, in that we'll be summarising 2026 championship bowl codes as, oh, maybe it's a bit premature for the two Connacht counties going into the final.
Yeah, Four weeks ago, I probably wouldn't have said Mayo would have been in the Ireland final.
Yeah.
Now that they're there, they have probably slowly improved game on game. I think the one thing now that you can probably look at, if you look at all the finals that they've been in the last few years, they have the forwards. I think that's a key thing. And like the young forwards that they have, I think that they're going to play with no fear. And I know it's an Ireland final, and that brings its own expectation and pressure, especially Mayo, with their fans getting really excited about it. And by the way, I love the fact that Andy has kind of doubled down on it and he's all for it. But I think that'll bring a different dimension to the game. And I think Mayo are within a great shout here. Like, I don't think it's a case of Kerry show up and win. I think it'll be a right good game.
It's going to be tight.
I think it'll be a right good game, yeah.
What about you two?
I would have a similar sentiment, yeah. I think, I to be honest, it's one of the, it's a difficult one to measure with the fact that all those Mayo losses in the All-Ireland finals were, well, the majority of them anyway were against Dublin. Across that era, like that unbelievable Dublin team. I don't think Mayo are going to, as Andy Moran said yesterday, lose this game because of the hype, or lose this game because the occasion's going to get to them. I think if they lose this game, it's because Kerry are going to be a better football team than them, and I think Kerry are a better football team than them, so I would imagine they'd win by a couple of points, but I don't think it'll be a drubbing by any means.
I'll throw out one point that might differentiate it from the hurling final, which I think it's being compared to. There's no 2-point rule in hurling. And I think if anything has been shown this year in the football championship, it's that once you get a momentum going with scores and 2-pointers, you can turn a game around on in the space of like 8-9 minutes. So if Mayo are going down the stretch, say 48 to 50 odd minutes, and they're trailing by 8 points, trailing by 10 points, that doesn't mean the game's going to end like that. They get a couple of kickouts, they win their kickout a couple of times, get momentum, get a couple of scores, get a couple of 2-pointers. They could be going down the final 3 or 4 minutes going into added time within a point or within 2 points. And if that's the case, depending on who's shooting into the hill in the second half, which we, as we've seen so far in Croke Park, is playing a major role in these games, you know, Mayo stand a chance in turning things around if they are trailing. The issue is if Kerry turn it on, like they did last year, and that was it, like 10, 15 minutes against Armagh, and they just demolished them and demoralised them. That can also happen if Kerry get momentum. So there is the potential for this to turn into a drubbing, but I don't think the case could be made that we've seen evidence of that throughout the championship. If anybody is benefiting from the rules, it's the teams that are not expected to win games this year, or not expected to put games up to bigger opposition.
You know, end of starting off the argument for Mayo there, perhaps, is the 2-pointer. I would have thought that could go against them as well if Kerry get going. And then, so like the hurling final finished with Galway got that goal with the penalty in the last puck of the game, which made it, I think, 11 points in the end.
Yeah.
But I could see Kerry winning by a bigger margin than that if their 2-pointers go in their favour, which is the exact opposite argument to end it there.
Yeah, well, if they definitely click, I think there's one team, like all they need is, like, I think with their Armagh game, like all they need is a 5-10 minute period, yeah, and they could really get into gear. But the thing I like about Mayo and the 2-pointer that you referenced there, Enda, is that at the start of the year, that was the one thing people were saying about Mayo. They do not kick 2-pointers. Last year, I think they were down near the very bottom.
Yeah.
And even straight away, even in the FPD League, the pre-season tournament, Mayo were, I think, watching the Roscommon game, I think they kicked 7 or 8 2-pointers in that game alone. And they've been always going for the 2-pointers. Now, I think they've probably tailed it back a small bit when it comes to championship. They're trying to look for the more high percentage shot, but the fact that Andy obviously recognised, right, we're not good at 2-pointers, let's go after 2-pointers. And the Hill thing is so funny, like in the last couple of years that's never really been a thing, but now, because to get a 2-pointer into the Hill, like, it's, you know, you need a proper strike, like Kobe and Ryan Dunn, who's two outside the boot ones spring to mind straight away. Like, it's a lot easier going down into Canal End to do that, so I think that'll play a big factor as well.
I'll tell you who doesn't give Mayo any opportunity or any chance. It's Dara O'Shea in today's Irish Times. So, Dara O'Shea, the headline is, there are just too many fires for Mayo to put out against Kerry. And the opening line is as brazen as you'll see, and even more brazen when you think of the Yerra Kerry attitude going into these games. Not often they're super confident, kind of playing down their own chances. Dara O'Shea starts off this article: the more I think about Sunday's All-Ireland final, the more straightforward it looks. Would you not just be cutting that out and blowing it up and putting it on the...
Absolutely, they will.
...the dressing room wall? He also has, like, I thought, you know, it's a strong start, but he's going to balance this out. He's going to say, look, you know, it's a tough game for Kerry and Mayo of good up-and-coming players. Doesn't really do that. He goes on and he says, that's what it comes down to, really. If you look through the squads available, Kerry just have more good players than Mayo. Another line that you could pin to the wall. And then he finishes it up by talking about, again, people making reference to the hurling final and the comparisons of that and the two teams. He makes that comparison between Limerick and Galway and the fact that Limerick didn't really have a big performance until the final. And he said that Kerry haven't had a performance where they can open up their shoulders and say, that's it, lads, that's the performance we've been looking for all year. No better place than a final for that to happen. If Kerry do that, it's a huge ask for anyone to stop them. I just don't see Mayo being up for it.
I think they'll be up for it.
I think they'll be up for it.
I don't know if they'll be up to it, though. Do you know?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's a lovely wordplay.
Yeah, you like that,
nice. Yeah. Yeah. Well, look how annoyed and angry the usually jovial Andy Moran was after the semi-final of the press conference.
He does say up to it.
Oh, he does say up to it. Ah, okay, but that's important.
Yeah. I thought, I loved that, Tony. I loved the way when he says, like, that, I don't think that's funny, like what you're saying about Mayo here.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant.
You know what I mean? Because we're used to, and like, even to deal with here, like, he's a pleasure. Like, it was like, this guy could have an ego if he wanted to, and he's brilliant. And that was a different side to him. And he still kind of said, he was still quintessentially himself. Like, he didn't lose the head, but he was like, no, I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
So Enda's reading of that, like, that's just going to add fuel, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the easiest thing in the world for him, when he was asked that question after the semi-final, all he could have said was, we're just focusing on the football.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, he knows what's going on, and he knows the Mayo fans will click into gear. Mm. And like, if you can't get up for an All-Ireland final, if you can't be excited, or if you can't have a bit of hype, you know, put the flags up, whatever, in the county, and, you know, just go a bit mad, like, when can you as a supporter in any sport? So I love the fact that he embraced it and he accepts it and he recognises. I'm sure the majority of the Mayo players, I think nearly all of them, they're living in Mayo, they're going to see it at some stage. I think the big thing probably for Andy is that when he gets them into a training session or gets them together into a room for meetings or all that, you know, they're all business. But like, players are going to see it. People are going to want to talk to the players. The county is going to shut down in the next couple of days. If they win, it'll be a different, you know, it'll be something we've never seen before. But I love the fact that he's completely on board with the Mayo supporters getting excited, because if any of our counties were in All-Ireland final, we'd be the exact same for us. Oh, so yeah. I'm all for it.
It's funny as well. I was listening to a bit of news around last night, and Arthur and Mick and Eve were talking about, like, that. When does what is the peak of, like, sporting joy as a fan? Because, like, you know, Arthur was talking about being at the Limerick game at the weekend, and it's like, already now it's kind of it's over now. You know, you're looking ahead to next year, and there's like, when do you actually sit back and evaluate and take in what's going on? I actually think the peak of Sport and Joy is before it actually happens. So I think the peak of what Kerry and Mayo supporters are going to get now, okay, yes, if they go and win it, they're going to have that moment of elation, absolutely, and the day or two celebration is going to be unbelievable, like it was when Westmead won the Leinster a couple of months ago. But it's the lead up to it, it's the build up, it's the anticipation, it's thinking about what's going to happen as opposed to actually seeing it happen. And of course, within the games, there'll be moments where something happens and you're like, that's unbelievable, that's what I came here to do, that's what why I enjoy this stuff. But it's the build up to the big day, I think, more so than the actual day itself that is the peak of that. I do think the question, to be fair, to Andy Moran in the press conference was valid. Like, you know, it's one of them where it would be a question that it would be a question you would ask to any county who's in a position where maybe they wouldn't have expected to be at the start of the year, you know, which was, I think the same question would have gone to Gavin Devlin if Louth had made the final two. But I can understand why Andy Moran would take it the way he did. And half your job as well, I think, when managers talk to the media and all that sort of stuff too, they're talking to the media, they're talking to the public, but they're also talking to their players too. And he's setting a tone, I think, there for what way the dressing room will approach it. And there's also a world where he's said, right, I'm saying this now, and this is the way they're going to look at how we're approaching this, but we're actually going to do this, you know. So there's many different ways in which you can manipulate a question like that to get what you need out of it. And I think he's a very clever fella, and there's reason behind what he's doing. I don't think it's pure emotion, you know, that he's getting his back up over something.
Yeah. Enda has a few videos here for us in the Mayo side of things. Just first there, we'll get a quick look at the headlines this morning. The Irish Independent, Rovers facing uphill battle. I don't know how many people saw this last night, but Shamrock Rovers playing Champions League, second qualifying round, first leg. They lost 2-0 to Ararat Armenia. Disastrous goals conceded there. You can actually get them on YouTube now. They're up this morning. Of Lee Grace getting intercepted at the back, and then goalkeeper for the second one, probably arguably could have done better from a long range shot, but they're 2-0 down. They had an unbelievable comeback last week against Floriana, of course, so they have to go again to progress. Pico Lopez well and truly back from the World Cup there. Speaking of more football news, Arsenal keen to swoop for Bruno Guimaraes, but Newcastle want £100 million. What's happening with Newcastle?
Yeah, they're getting fleeced.
They can't sign anyone.
Yeah.
And they're getting fleeced at the same time. And Liverpool in talks to sell major stake and boost club finances. This story emerged a few months ago. This is Jeff Bezos, part of a consortium.
By Liverpool.
Yeah. So FSG bought Liverpool. I was interested in these figures, right? They bought Liverpool for $300 million in October 2010. And they're looking for a percentage that would value Liverpool at $6 billion.
I was going to say, that seems incredibly low, $300 million, considering Chelsea just bought Morgan Rodgers for $117 million.
That was the Hicks and Gillette era of Liverpool, which was disastrous. Yeah. That was Roy Hodgson and co.
Yeah.
And so that's the value of it now, is that's what they're looking. So it's just part of the club, I suppose. It's a bit like Jim Ratcliffe and the lads at United. But Jeff Bezos, yes, the first thing I read in the Sky Sports Yellow Bear coming in today, Jeff Bezos in bid to possibly own a bit of Liverpool. I think we did talk about this in the show a few months ago. I think it did rear its head.
Yeah.
Villa test Chelsea with a Garnacho loan bid, which I believe would be an obligation to buy. So this is part of the Morgan Rodgers conspiracy here. That's why he costs so much money. They're getting Garnacho on the other side of it. Garnacho's career, like, you know, there was once upon a time there, Donny. Do you remember the time that Cristiano Ronaldo did the interview with Piers Morgan when he was still at the club the second time round under Eric Ten Hag?
I do, yeah.
And earlier that day, he had won the game against Fulham, Craven Cottage. But he was like, oh, don't worry about it, you have Garnacho.
Yeah. He's the modern footballer that you, like, love to hate.
Yeah.
As a United supporter watching him, just the ego of Ronaldo, but the ability of
Garnacho.
Garnacho, yeah, exactly. It was so funny, like, even when he was with the Argentinian national team, like, he was like a fish out of water. He didn't really fit in with all the dogs of war there. And even with Messi, like, there was a clip going around, I think, when Messi got injured in the game and Garnacho was sitting on the bench beside him, and they just didn't mutter a word to one another. It was very, very awkward, to say the least.
On the Morgan Rodgers stuff, so interestingly enough, that's now Morgan Rodgers, Cole Palmer and Liam Delap are all teammates now at Chelsea. They played in the same Manchester City side that won the FA Youth Cup.
A few Irish boys in there,
a few years ago. So the City pipeline starting to really show its colours now, top level football.
Joe Hodge was at the base of midfield for that team.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, he's obviously over in Portugal.
Speaking of Irish players, the base of midfield, one thing that might have gone missing over the last couple of days, he was in one of the papers today talking about Michael Carrick and how good it is to have him at the job, going to these games and seeing youth players as Devaney, who was at loan with St Mirren last year. He came on in the second half against Wrexham and Manchester United's pre-season friendly, and he played kind of like a centre-back role.
Mm-hmm.
He was really good for St Mirren last year. Like, solid, good in the ball, head in his shoulders.
He's tenacious.
Smart player. So I'd be very, very keen to see what his move is this year. He'll probably go out and loan again, potentially. Maybe to Scotland would be another good move, because when you go to Scotland, you get first team first team minutes. So I think he has a bright future ahead of him.
Yeah, for sure. He was thrown into deep end as well. He was only, I think he only signed for St Mirren, and he signed that morning and he made his debut that night. Played pretty much every minute for him there. Killian Phillips is obviously there too. We'd probably want to get a few caps under his belt, because he's of course eligible for those across the pond. But his father is spoken, not, I don't know if it was spoken, but like, would be active on social media and all that sort of stuff about some of the Irish pages posting some of the stuff about him. So seems as though he's very well set on playing for Ireland, and we'd be very silly to let that one slip through our fingers. If, as I say, I don't know if he's any appetite to play for England. Hopefully not, because he's a very talented boy.
See, Matt Doherty's on the move. Sheffield United, 1 year contract.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw that James Coleman was training with them for a while too, but obviously they decided to sign another Irish right back at the tail end of his career.
Any word on Mo Salah?
Question, actually.
No, don't think so.
The rumours about the MLS? Am I making that up? I thought I saw something maybe a couple of days ago.
I heard very, very quiet whispers of Besiktas. But they just got Leandro Trossard from Arsenal for not much, 17 million or something.
You would have thought Al Hilal would have been in the mix, but they've decided
to sign him. Yeah, nice segue there, Matthew. Yeah, Al Hilal, Crescencio Somerville in Saudi switch. Hammers agree, £60 million deal. It's amazing, isn't it? They get relegated with a whimper. I mean, he was one of the occasional bright sparks of West Ham season.
Had a good World Cup too.
It is huge, having a good World Cup. The El Hadj Diouf method. Get a good World Cup, you never know what might happen to you.
By the way, sorry, just to wrap the football thing, the Garnacho move, that's an unbelievable move for him. How he's managed to wrangle his way to another good club who are going to be playing Champions League football.
He won't play though, will he?
Well, he's good.
He might play the way that Jadon Sancho played, bits and pieces. What is it? Unai Emery has his fetish about United cast-offs.
Yeah,
bring him in. He loves it. Victor Lindelof doing all right at Villa.
Rashford. He was a good egg. Big difference.
Yeah,
between a good egg and a bad egg.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
On Mo Salah, just really quickly. So he is being linked with Besiktas. This will be interesting. If Bohemians, who are playing in the UEFA Conference League against the Kosovan sides, Balkany tonight. It's the last European game in Daily Mount Park before they demolish it. And should they win that game, they set up a tie with Besiktas. So we could see Mo Salah on Irish soil if he does sign for Besiktas and Bohemians do go through that game.
That's the whisper, who knows?
That'll sell out the Liverpool Lickley's fans.
Back at the Mirror Sports, red card for Infantino. FIFA accused of destroying game as calls grow for Bas to quit after the World Cup situation that we saw. Like, who would call for Infantino to quit? He answers to nobody. He'd have to go himself.
What a halftime show.
You enjoy that, did you?
No.
Bring that in for the All-Ireland final, Joe. Make a show for it.
Yeah.
Record for Gianni's same here in the Irish Daily Star. Bradley, we were just too slappy. You're destroying football back at the Sun Sport, Gianni Infantino. The problem with that is, like, we kind of feel indignation now, like, but you know, the days will pass and then the club football will return and Infantino will stay where he is, I'd say. Nothing's going to change there.
Infantino was in Ireland this week,
He's
coming to Belfast this weekend, I believe.
What's he doing?
It's an annual general meeting between United the Ireland. International Football Association Board.
Waterman. Oh, fair enough.
Bradley, we were just too slappy. We touched on that Shamrock Rovers game there. And as we make our way back here to Gaelic football with some videos that Enda has for us, Connolly, see this? Back of the Irish Daily Star. Mayo can end their Sam curse. This is Dermot Connolly, Dublin great Mayo villain.
I was listening to him on a podcast. He was saying,
I'm going for Mayo to win by one, he says.
Yeah, maybe they've taken it from the podcast. Yeah, that's exactly what he said. But he teed it up as if he was going to say that Kerry were going to win. And then at the end of it, threw in Mayo by one.
He did say in another one of those interviews, I think he was doing the rounds, that he always viewed Mayo as Dublin's rivals, which was the case when he was playing, I guess. But Kerry and Dublin are obviously the the storied rivalry of Ireland. But yeah, he always said that they never really saw Kerry as a team that they couldn't get up for and up against, whereas Mayo, they knew they were going to have a real battle on their hands. So it was interesting. Andy Moran was speaking yesterday. He was speaking to a couple of media outlets. We'll bring you some of the stuff that Jonathan Higgins had now in a second. I do want to touch on two of the things in the Examiner he was speaking about, which I thought were quite interesting. He speaks about the relentlessness of being a manager now and being on 24/7, and some of the things he kind of compares it to Premier League managers and how everyone's obsessed. He calls himself an addict when it comes to GAA football, and he also says that he just can't not think about it regardless of what he does. He's 24/7, always available to take a call. Does mention that his daughter has been plaguing him to go see Toy Story 5 for the last couple of weeks. He's like, it's not going to happen, stop asking me, we're in the All-Ireland final, watch Kobe instead. But he does say that one of the lines that he learned from James Horan was that even when you're not there, you're there. So he's struggling to turn off is Andy Moran. Then another thing that was quite interesting in this Examiner piece was he talks about the types of players that Mayo produce versus other counties. And he said there's a reason that Mayo produce number fives and number sevens, because you get loads of the ball, you get the run, and there's space in front of you. I thought that was very interesting. Is that a Mayo thing, or is that just something that happens with Western football? Is that a Mayo DNA that they produce halfbacks, or what do you think is behind what Andy Moran's saying?
Their DNA, especially the last few years, especially during my time, I think athletic is kind of the word that come to mind. Like, if you like he said, you look at all their players, like their main players for the last few years, Keegan's, Colin Boyle, Keith Higgins, like they can get up and down the pitch. In terms of maybe, that's obviously a huge positive, but as I already kind of mentioned already, they were probably lacking that out and out score in the last few years. Now, I know Killian obviously was a heavy score for them, that probably papered over a lot of the cracks as well. Now, this is why I think they have a huge chance, because they're going now with proper footballers in the forward line. And I've referenced it before, like if you have four scoring fours, and I know they have three out and out scoring fours, but if you have four, which Kerry I think have the advantage in, I think it's going to be very, very hard to stop. But to go back to your question, yeah, like it's always been the case, like, and even when you think of, say, Lee Keegan's goals in the semi-finals and the finals, he's coming late, coming from deep, and he's coming onto a ball off maybe Aidan's shoulder or Killian's shoulder, and, you know, rattling the net, like, and that's kind of been a hallmark of the Mayo team. And even when the likes of probably Keegan or Higgins or a Boyle or even a Barber coming out from defence, like the Mayo crowd used to get excited about that, because that was kind of their hallmark. So there definitely is something in that. But in terms of Western thing, I don't know, because you go across to Galway, like their tradition is the footballer's footballer. The Joyces, the Savages, the Fallons, the Donlans. So I'm not sure if it's an underage coaching thing, but I think the way they're doing it now, trying to get a lot of footballers in, is probably the better way to go, especially now with the new rules as well.
Yeah, he does speak about the reference that Kerry hold their forward lines in the 13, and he has a funny line where he says Kerry understand that a 14 or a 15, they can be a tiny bit lazy and a tiny bit quirky and a tiny bit mavericky, so they kind of just let them at it, whereas Mayo sort of look down on that person, which is an interesting one. Did you consider yourself as lazy or mavericky, quirky?
Definitely, probably when I started, yeah. Probably as the years went on, I probably got a bit smarter in terms of maybe you can't be as lazy, or you can't make it as obvious that you want to be as lazy as you want, because you'd be found out fairly quick. But yeah, I think Tommy's colleague on here, I think James Dunne, who was the maverick when he came in. I remember, I think when he won his first All-Star in 2013, he was walking up to collect it and he just give a little wink to the camera. Like, that's, you know, just kind of off the cuff kind of thing. I think he's sort of a maverick in the way he played as well. He was very much off the cuff. Whereas you might look at maybe, I think it was probably when James Horan came in, his first thing was that by a mile, Mayo were probably the best tacklers in the country. And that started with their forwards. And I think that's probably what lends itself to Mayo having maybe the profile of the athletic player. I think they had Donny Buckley in there as well as a kind of tackling coach. So that probably added to that too. But yeah, I definitely think there's something in Kerry that I think the expectation is if you're a forward, you have to absolutely know where the posts are. And they do know where they are, to be fair. And James obviously did as well.
Absolutely. Right, we'll bring you some of the Andy Moran video here. So we spoke about the conversation that he had with the press box about the Mayo fans and being up for it and how the bullshit question got under his skin a little bit. He does clarify his comments now in this video, talking to Jonathan Higgins yesterday, or last week in Mayo's Mayo's press day, and he doesn't back down, he doubles down.
I'd say to you straight up, it's way easier than it was back in our time, because we used to have 4 weeks coming into an All-Ireland final, so like people, all of a sudden people had nothing else to talk about. You have the All-Ireland hurling final to talk about on the weekend, and then you've what, you've 2 days really. The Monday morning papers will be either Limerick or Galway, then it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then you'll have a bit on the Sunday morning papers and away you go. So it's not as bad as it once was, if I'm being honest. But like, What annoyed me about that question was Hype never lost a game of football. Like, people getting excited, supporters enjoying themselves, never lost anyone a game of football. And like none of my All-Irelands that I partaked in had that anything to do with it. So it's just something that to throw at Mayo. You know, but like I keep saying, Kerry and Dublin have dominated the All-Irelands for 100 years here. Everyone else wins in All-Ireland every now and then. It's not, you know, that's the way it works. And we're going to try to win one. We're going to try to win one next Sunday. And if we're good enough, we will. If we're not, it's got nothing to do with our supporters having a good time, you know.
I think that's fair enough. I do think it's overplayed how much of a role supporters have in a game. If Mayo loses All-Ireland, it's not going to be because Mayo fans got up for the match. It's just not.
Yeah, plainly. I think you can paint it whatever way you want, really. You know, if they go and win it and the fans are in full voice, they got them over the line. If they go and lose it and the fans are in full voice, you got them toward the line. You know, that kind of way. Like, I think there's never a way in which the fans can be at fault unless they don't turn up, you know, and leave the stadium half empty, because that can play a part. If you're severely outnumbered in a game, I think at Crow Park, it's another thing too, where it's such a big place. It's like, it just takes on life of its own. If you're in a small little cauldron of a venue where, you know, you're packed out and whoever are heading down to Breffni Park to play Cavan and the place is jammed full of Cavan people, that's not going to be ideal. Yeah. You know, so.
Well, John Kiley got the Limerick fans going against Clare in the second half of the semi-final.
Yeah.
He said it afterwards, he wasn't happy with their performance.
Yeah.
He said they have a job to do with those fans.
Yeah. Like, as well as that, like, Andy being appointed as the manager, like, a lot of it was get the fans back on side.
Yeah.
I think it was the Tyrone final that kind of maybe fell by the wayside. I think maybe there wasn't that connection with the fans maybe that there was there when they were in the All-Ireland finals kind of throughout with the Dublin games. And I think he's definitely done that. And I think he's done that now because of his personality as well. He's such a likeable kind of fella. And like, he's just like very energetic and he's optimistic and all those type of things as well. And obviously he's a Mayo legend. I think that was not, he's obviously very much qualified, he did a stint with Leitrim as well, but I think that was probably a lot of the reason why, maybe, look, if we get Andy in, he'll always get the benefit of the doubt from the Mayo fans because he's one of them. And the fact that he's saying that about the Mayo fans, that like hype and the excitement is their big thing, like that'll only, you know, resonate with the Mayo fans as well. So I don't think people saying that, and I think if Mayo win on Sunday, the word hype or will never be used again.
Oh.
It's just said about the Mayo fans and maybe the Cork hurling fans, maybe,
yeah,
to a lesser extent. But I think the reason why people are saying about the hype and the fans is because they haven't got over the line. But if they get over the line, let it never be said again, because the Mayo fans, like, and I've played against the Mayo fans, especially in McHale Park, like, they do get on top of you. And when things go well for Mayo, like, it's just an avalanche of scores. And it's a very, very hard place to be at times.
Hey there, it's Will O'Callaghan here from Off The Ball. And before you dive into this podcast, here's one you're going to want to stick in your diary. This coming Friday, Apple Green's annual 24/7 event is back, and for just one day only, they've got loads of brilliant offers across their stores. You can pick up a chicken fillet roll or a breakfast roll for just €2.47, have a car wash for €2.47, or grab a packet of Tato crisps for just 24 cents. There are some great food offers too. You've got Whoppers, selected 6-inch Subway sandwiches, Taco Bell beefy melt burritos, and Chopstick small bite boxes, all available for, you guessed it, €2.47. It's only happening this Friday, so don't miss out. Head along to your local Apple Green store and make the most of these fantastic one-day-only offers. Terms and conditions do apply. And now, enjoy your podcast.
We'll take some more Andy Moore in here. So he was obviously asked about the key men up front, Ryan O'Donoghue, Kobe, and many more. and specifically about Kobe, because this potentially could be his last Mayo game for a very long time. So this is Andy Moran talking about Kobe, his impact, and the impact of the rest of the players, but also Kobe's future for Mayo.
Joe, you never know what the future holds with like such a young man, such a talented boy. Like we'll see what the future holds for him. I'm not writing Kobe McDonald's script, but I can tell you that. So we'll support him in whichever way he goes over the next year to 3 to 5 years. We'll be here to support him. Kieran, it was funny, mentioned him on Saturday, retired today. So what an amazing player, but look at the career he had after coming back from Australia. Just amazing. So yeah, we'd love to have Kobe for longer, but I said at the start of the year, we just enjoy him while we have him. And Joe, he's just had a brilliant year. Like he's yeah, such a great fella. But as I said, Owen McGrail, Darragh Byrne, Bob Keane, they're all of the same kind of vintage, and they've all brought the same attitude here. They just want to play for me and they want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not quite saying he's going to stay. Not quite.
Are you still sticking with the same answer to the question yesterday at the end of?
No, I think he's gone. I think he is gone. I don't think there's a world where we see Kobe next year.
You say there's a chance with those eyes?
Yeah, I think if they win, if I was him, if they win, I'd be suitcased the whole lot out the door. Like your legend grows. Like I think you turn into this kind of mythical sort of creature. If you leave, you play for the 1 year, win the All-Ireland with Mayo and never turn again, I think build a statue, you know. I think that's type. If they lose and obviously he heads away in the next few years and Mayo are still knocking on the door,
yeah,
there might, because he has the taste for, see, like Pierce Hanley's often referenced because obviously he's a Mayo man as well, but Pierce didn't have the impact that Kobe's having this year, and Kobe is right at home here. Kobe knows how good he is, and Kobe knows that at this level he's very comfortable. There's probably a small bit of an unknown maybe with that with Pierce Hanley. Now Pierce Hanley was a phenomenal player. Remember Minor, he was outrageous. But the fact that in a few years' time, and if Sunday doesn't go well for Mayo, and if Mayo are still knocking on the door, I think there's every chance. Like, remember, if he comes back in 10 years, he's still only going to be 28.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going to happen in Australia. It could be very similar to what Kieran went through with Hawthorne. He might like it, and the pull of the Mayo jersey might bring him back. But if they do win, I think I'd be happy days, job done, out the gap.
I think he is going, isn't he?
He is. Yeah,
he's going. So. He is going. Yeah. So, but I think you're right. I think it'd be far, far more comfortable, far easier for him to go if they do win. I think he could leave happy. I think you're right. The mythical creature thing is such a good point too, because you're this guy who's come and just broken this curse or whatever, and you're gone. He's like he came and he went and he did what he had to do, and that's it.
As good as he is already, he'll be better if he leaves, because you'll be talking about him.
Exactly.
100%. We need a name for the trio of Darragh Byrnes, Ryan O'Donoghue and Kobe if they win. We need some sort of name for that.
Or like that MSN name. Or something, yeah, like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. I don't know what, yeah, that's tough one to put on the spot for, but
yeah.
I'm sure they've got something.
We'll figure it out.
Got something.
The Mayo fans will have something.
Yeah, they will.
Colin's thinking
Kobe
hard.
Kobe Ryan. But then that leaves Darragh Byrne out. Yeah.
We'll have a think. Maybe there's a breakfast buffet.
Don't be right about that, a bird.
That's all class, right. Yeah.
Jonathan was
stick that in a t-shirt.
Jonathan was also down in Kerry. Beautiful Kerry. You'll see now in the background. It's amazing here behind Jack O'Connor. And he essentially just asked Jack about like his legacy of Kerry, and there's loads in the interview that you'll be able to see on our socials, but kind of gets into like Kerry forwards and winning two in a row and how difficult that can be. And Jacko, as you'll see here, kind of just speaking about enjoying being part of this Kerry team, because how can you not enjoy being part of a Kerry setup that has David Clifford, Sean O'Shea and beyond in your forward line? So this is Jack O'Connor.
I have to say, I was drawn to a line that you did, I think an interview you did at the end of last year, saying had you not won the final, that would have been it, you wouldn't have come back. Are you kind of glad you come back now for days like this?
Well, I wouldn't have been asked back for
a while. Maybe that's a different label.
The choice wouldn't have been mine. So look, I'm still enjoying it, if that's what you're asking me. You know, it's a great bonus for me this hour of my life to be still involved with a great bunch of players, you know, who were very easily managed. And you know, the great, great enthusiasm around the county, so I'm privileged to be involved.
You referenced the experience in your squad and how it aided you to get over the line against Dublin. It's a slightly different Mayo in terms of Andy in first year in charge, and then but younger players potentially in the squad as well. It's a different dynamic from both sides, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah, and you'd be hoping that maybe our experience might be a bit of an advantage to us, but there's also the other side of the coin, the exuberance and the enthusiasm of youth, and you know, with no hint of fear in them, so they might shoot the lights on a big day, you know. So there's that side of it as well. And I remember Paddy Shea telling me one time that the more finals he played, and the more nervous he got. So it can work for you or against you, depending on your own makeup.
Is that a fair point? The more finals you play, the more nervous you get.
Well, I suppose the more finals you play in, you're getting closer to hanging up the boots, so maybe it could be something in that. So there could be could be more of a fear more than anything else, but I think that experience thing is huge. Mm. I think the fact that so many of that Kerry team have been the 2022, and it's funny, after I watched back bits and pieces of the 2022 final the other day, and the first thing Jack Connor said when he was asked about the year, he said, "We had loads and loads of fun." And I can't remember Jack Connor ever saying that about the teams he's with, even 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think it shows as well that he's been able to evolve as a manager, dealing with what the players and the type of young lads that would have been 20 years ago to now as well. But yeah, look, I think the experience thing and being in the finals, and I think the expectation of them when they're in the final, their expectation is absolutely to win. I think that does count for a lot. And he's right about the young fellas and the inexperience, they might shoot the lights out, but I think experience is huge on a day like that.
Mm.
What's the big difference between an experienced player and an inexperienced player in the final? Is it what they do with the ball, making silly decisions, taking silly pot shots on, or?
Yeah, well, there's loads of it. I think even, like, forget about even the game, but I think even the build up. Like, I'm sure, and any finals that you've ever played in, regardless what sport, you're always told, just treat it like another game, but you can't do that. And I think the build-up for a lot of... Now, Mayo are lucky, like, they have a lot of experienced players that have played in those finals. The likes of the O'Connors, Paddy Durkin, obviously Aidan as well. So they'll be definitely, you know, giving advice to the younger players that haven't maybe played in finals like that. Like, the build-up itself, I think all that type of thing is huge. And then obviously when you get onto the pitch, it's just the game, without being cliched about it, like, it genuinely takes on a life. It's when you don't know what's going to happen. And I think the fact that the Kerry players have been in so many recent finals that I'm sure they're able to deal with what can be thrown at them. Mayo might be slightly bit different. And with Mayo as well, and I saw reference throughout the last couple of weeks after they beat Loud that they hadn't beaten a Division 1 team this year. And I think that's probably, it's a small bit of an unfair comment to make, because Mayo are in the final because they deserve to be in the final. They're in the top two in the country because they've beaten what's in front of them. And with the new rules, like, it's very hard to take form into account, I think. I think a lot of what happens now, club or county, I think a lot of it is actually just on the day.
Mm.
Like, how many games this year, like, would we have predicted before the ball is thrown in and we've got it wrong? Because we think the form of one team is better than the other, or one team is better than the other. I just don't think that is allowed to pass anymore. I think because of the new rules and because of the way the game goes with momentum especially, yeah, Kerry on paper the better team, but it's still all in the day, and Kerry still have to perform, because they got over the line in the quarter final, the semi final, probably didn't reach their high standards, and they could have been caught potentially by Tyrone and Dublin, so they'll know as well. If they're not at it, they could be caught as well on Sunday.
Yeah.
We'll chat more about this game with Jay in a while, Donny, but in the meantime, did you see the jersey and the kit that Mayo will be wearing for the All Ireland final?
Beautiful.
So we can have to wave an image of it here. There you go. All white. Gorgeous. Did lead me to think, right? Well, first of all, are you a jersey man? A lover of jerseys? Or do you care?
I am, yeah. I think, like, looking well and looking the part, I think that's part of it. I think, like, the kids, you think of when we were younger.
Huge.
You want to buy the jersey. Yeah, and if that's Gaelic jerseys or soccer jerseys, I think the jersey is special. And, like, when you see a colour, you just associate that with a certain county or a certain team. You know,
it's funny because, like, you got a lot of blue and yellow going on around the country, right? But Roscommon have a beautiful Parma, the Italian side Parma look to them.
It's
that
gorgeous,
jersey.
Yeah,
it is gorgeous.
And it's funny, when it was released, I think 18 months ago at this stage, there was mixed reviews to it, but any of the players I've been chatting to and who we were, it was like, oh, wow.
So it led me to think, right, when looking at this, like, oh, what do Mayo need to do to lift this curse, right? So this is the all white kit that we saw there. I was like, who was the last team to win an All-Ireland senior football final wearing their non-home jersey?
Is that a quiz question?
It is a quiz question.
It is. Now, you asked me this last night.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about it. And I still don't have an answer.
I haven't a clue. I haven't got a clue.
Because it's not going to be...
Is it something as simple as last year? Did Kerry wear the
wig?
You have
to go all the way back to 2025.
Yeah, it was
for
right.
The last answer. Yeah.
It was the last year.
I had a feeling they were wearing the blue. Do you know when Paddy's hopping the ball?
Oh,
Or he's toe tapping on the half.
That's a bit of a trick question, though.
Why? Cause just because I got it right.
No, because it's like slash year.
Yeah, I was going back to the 90s. Yeah, I was trying to be too smart.
I wasn't even considering last year as an option. Yeah. I was at that game.
So the next one is after that, I think it's 2010. I think Cork beaten down.
That's right. The boat were away in gold, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was my guess. That was going to be my guess.
Yeah. I think that's it anyway, right? So then I was thinking, when's the last time Kerry and Mayo played each other in the decider? It was exactly 20 years ago, 2006, right? They both wore their, what would be considered their home jerseys. Interestingly, in 2004, Mayo wore red in the same final.
As in they wore
their
home away jersey.
Their non home jersey.
Yeah.
So they're away.
Let me get
their alternative kit was red in 2004.
Yeah.
So when you were asking me this question, I was immediately like, "Well, it's not going to be Kerry, because the majority they have played in their green gold, and they also come up against Dublin. It's not going to be Dublin either. Probably not going to be Tyrone because they were white, and they're not coming up against anybody with white."
Mm.
It's not going to be Armagh because they were orange. But sometimes Armagh pull out a weird card, wear their black jersey. They do that quite often.
Mm-hmm.
The championship, just for the crack. They'd probably wear their away kit more than
Kerry,
most teams.
Yeah.
Against Kerry, they definitely do it. So my logic is like, it has to be like a Down or a Derry coming up against another Ulster side.
Yeah.
So that's where I landed on 2010. Opposite
end of the country in 2010, and it worked that way. I wonder why in 2004 Mayo went non-home. 2 years later they went home.
Kerry and Donegal would have bought water alternative kit last year, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Donegal were in white.
Yeah. So it's funny, that just shows you the weird things that you don't remember from games that you were at. I was at that game.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I had to look it up.
Now that you say it, I do remember it.
I had to look it up myself.
James O'Donoghue was speaking about this on the football pod this week, about the 2014 final, because both Donegal and Kerry, they both wore their home kits, which is crazy to think. And that's again that Durkin passes the ball to Kieran Donnie.
Yeah.
Oh.
James O'Donoghue said it was a nightmare, because you're looking in the stadium, all the fans are wearing the same colours, then all the players are wearing the same colours, and all the management are wearing the same colours.
Look. 12 years later.
Came straight from the horse's mouth.
I was in touch with Davey Burke last night, Donnie.
Very good.
Your former manager.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I says, do you have a word on Donny?
Here we go.
Do you know what he came back to me with? Bullet points.
Oh, this will be good.
A little PowerPoint presentation on you.
Wow.
It's very nice. Very nice. Did you get on well with Davey Burke?
Very well. Still do.
It reads well.
This wouldn't have gone well if he didn't like each other.
Imagine this was absolutely scathing.
It'd be worse if you like read it.
Terrible trainer.
Yeah.
Terrible leader.
Yeah.
You're one of the good ones, he says. There's a summary of you as a player there. I noticed you're left-handed, writing notes there the other day, of course. Wand of a left foot to start off. This is that description. We yet to have a description of the equipment for the right-footed player.
Mm.
You have a wand of a left foot. What do you have as a right-footed?
Left-footers look better, though, when there's...
Everything looks better on left. Everything.
Yeah.
That's what he starts with.
Can't have a wand of a right foot.
It doesn't work. There's no magic there.
Everyone has a right foot.
Yeah.
How is your right foot?
For standing, is it?
Yeah.
It's definitely improved, but when
serviceable,
yeah. If it comes out now, or a friend of mine said my weak foot is outside my left foot, so yeah, it's gotten a small bit better.
They did this corner kick skills routine with Paul Merson about 10 years ago on Sky, where you had to score directly from the corner. So on the right side, it was great. On the side where you take with your left foot, he went outside the right, and he was still scoring because he has absolutely no left foot. And the guy played for Arsenal in England.
Yeah,
it's amazing how far you can go. Antonio Valencia United, do you remember him?
I do.
Attacks would slow down if it was on his left side because he had to go back on his right.
Yeah, I remember. And then he randomly scored a worldie in his left foot against Everton or Leicester. He cuts in from the right hand side and just whips it in the top left corner.
It's beginner's luck, like it was the first time he ever used it.
He looks so uncomfortable.
Ball skills and skill education for Tony Smith. Out of the top drawer, consistently executed. Loyalty to the group always, both to other players and management, no matter what. That's hard to come by. And his best attribute was his game intelligence and football brain, as I would call it. He has an understanding of the game, tactical decisions like few other players. You would never have to go through a game plan twice with Tony. He was on the same page immediately, or maybe even before you. So you can see from the above, I have a lot of time for Tony. Just lovely words.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very hard to receive them. So what can you say about this?
I wasn't prepped for this now.
I was thinking, reading it, I was like, oh, that's class. And you step away last year, but you were on the road for what, since 2012? So it's 13 years. So I was thinking, how did the first year go now, the 2026 championship about to come to an end? How has it been?
It's been great. And the reason it's been great, is because maybe just doing the bit of punditry and stuff, I kind of fell into it. I didn't finish up last July or whenever and say, right, I'm going doing something else. Or, you know, I just expected I just sail off into the sunset and play my club football and stuff like that. But having the opportunity to, you know, chat football with people. And I think, Dave, you kind of referenced there, like, I love chatting about the game. I love the tactical stuff about it. I love just, you know, I love the hustle and bustle of all that type of thing. It just excites me. So, this year has been great. It's been busy. I kind of half expected that, you know, my wife has kind of said to me, geez, you'd be around the house a bit more. And she kind of referenced, geez, you've been around the house even less. But maybe that's a good thing as well. She's happy enough with that. But it's been very, very good. And even throughout the year, and this is why I'm very fortunate that I didn't miss it once, which is a nice place to be. I think the last 13 years, 14 seasons, I didn't take a break. I didn't take a year off, and I probably felt like maybe I came straight in from minor, and it's one thing I kind of still annoys me. I should have taken a break, or maybe came in when I was 20 or 21. I came straight in, and I definitely was not ready for it. Like, whatever about physicality wise, but even mentally, and I was a bit naive, a bit childish.
Did you, when you went into the senior setup at that age, did you still want to go back? Once you started, you were like, well, I'm not going to go back now. I can't say I don't think I'm actually ready for this level yet.
No,
very hard.
No, exactly.
That,
like. And the reason why I thought that I thought football ability wise, skill wise, I had no problem. I thought I was right at home, and I have no problem saying that. But the other parts, and maybe understanding what it takes to be a senior footballer, I probably didn't realise that till probably maybe towards my middle 20s, where the game was obviously changing, and it was a lot of defensive football, and it was very, very hard for an inside forward, and especially probably someone of my physique as well, to make a name or to be top the whole time. So that probably was a big learning curve. Do you know actually what was one of the best things ever for me was probably actually COVID and the break. When COVID kicked in and we had a clean break, I came back a new man. And whatever about a new player, but I came back with a completely different mindset. I came back with thinking, isn't it great to play football? And whatever happens on the Sunday, I'm heading to school Monday morning, the kids couldn't care less what happens on Sunday with me, or, you know. So that was probably a big thing for me, that was probably the break for me, or the year out for me, was basically the 2020.
What age are you now?
I'm 33.
So there would definitely be life left in you if you wanted it.
I'd say so, yeah. I think so, yeah. But look, I think being in Dublin and family and all that type of thing kind of kicks in as well. And no, I was like, I knew straight away when the whistle went last year when we were
the Cork match.
I knew straight away. Yeah, 100%. I was happy with that.
So your last play was, you were, when you tried to generate a two-pointer chance, wasn't
we
it?
Did, yeah.
The fourth meter,
we were, in fairness to Cork, that day, like, they were so good defensively. Which
randomly would show up like that.
It's not something I'd consider Cork,
totally.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. Happy enough.
And you were happy.
Yeah.
So the first year, like, besides all the media work and your wife being disappointed about how busy you are, has it gone as you imagined when you decided to call it a day? Like, is there anything that surprised you about, I miss X about the game, but the Y aspect I don't really care about?
No, not even. And even, really? Like, even when Roscommon won the Connacht Championship, and that was a big thing, like, I was at the game, obviously, and there was no part of me like, oh, I wish I hung on. Now, if they got to the latter ends of the championship, like the proper stuff at the end of the chat, like I'd be like okay maybe I you know, shot the bull a little bit too quick here, but
yeah.
not even that. And and I was actually, that was very satisfying for me, that there was no part of me
that's
thinking
how you felt,
exactly
yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a hell of a win against Galway in the Connacht final. Like that's Roscommon's first kind of championship since 2019, isn't
yeah,
it?
We, yeah, we and our first time winning in the Hyde since 25 years. Wow. So that was kind of the big monkey off the back for the lads. But I was brilliant, and like all year they were absolutely brilliant. Like it wasn't like there was 4 or 5 retirements, a couple of lads injured. Like there was a big change to the team, and the younger lads and the inexperienced lads that came in, just a breath of fresh air, and probably what was needed, you know.
Yeah.
And It was something that now they can build on for next year.
But I think Roscommon were impressing so many people up till and including the Connacht final, especially when Mark Dowd was like, this guy is getting them playing some unbelievable football. I wonder, because he's appointed in, I think it was August, wasn't it?
It was, last, yeah. Third week of August.
Was there any conversation there?
We had a chat, yeah, It was more so when he got the job. I sent him a text, and then we had a chat.
He got excited.
Yeah, no, I just sent him a text message, wished him all the best. Like I'd no doubt he will throughout the years. Yeah. Like he's a great Roscommon man. He's unbelievable pedigree, and we had a good chat for half an hour, 40 minutes about everything. He just said the last thing he said. Look, if you ever feel like you want to change your mind, the door's always open. So that's I thought that was a lovely touch by him. Yeah. But that was the way we left it, and. I think he's been excellent, and I love the fact as well that he came straight in and he's put his own imprint on it as well. You know, it's Mark Dowd's team now, and I think it's been a breath of fresh air. I must pay Davy Burke now to Bob for that, or brown envelope for those type of comments.
He's acting like he hasn't already paid him.
Yeah.
Actually, he texts me to say, what will I say about you? So what you're reading out is actually what I said about myself.
It's like one of those cameo things in the celebrities where you tell them what to say. Yeah. He was like, that's so he can read it out. We'll call this section the getting to know Donny Smith section. What's the favourite goal that you scored yourself in your career?
It has to be the Mayo 1 McHale Park. No, it was actually a soccer goal. It was a rebound, and it came up to me lovely. I think I actually kind of shinned it, but it looked good. And it looked good from behind me when I shot. And it was one of those games. It was back in the old rules, and it was just one of those where we were against the wind, and there was no scores in the game, and we got that goal, and we had a penalty before that, and it kind of gave us a small bit of breathing space. So for the importance, that was definitely up there as well. Yeah.
What's your favourite goal overall?
Yeah, I would say probably we played Tyrone 2 years ago in a league match. It was one that I was proud of because I'm not great over my head. There was a long diagonal put into me over my head. I caught it, and it was on Niall Morgan as well, which was nice. Niall's a class goalkeeper, and I had a bit of a crack with him after it. Saying,
"Friend of the show, yeah."
Yeah, I said to him, "I thought you would have got that one." So that was a nice one as well. But I wasn't prolific goal scorer. I was more out, and as the lads would say to me, you're out cherry picking, looking for the handy ball for a point. But
yeah, your number of points is outrageous. Like, how are you with what they'd call in cricket sledging?
In terms of giving it or receiving it?
Yeah, what was your ratio?
Bit of both, to be honest. Like, I'm not going to lie. If I was getting it, I could absolutely.
Would you be saying something? I don't know. I was that nasty.
No, it would be more so a bit of crack. Like, give certain fellas. I remember a certain game. I'm not going to say the game or the player I was saying to, but there was a free that was being taken, and he ended up missing it the last kick of the game. And I remember kind of saying to him, going over this, I said, you sure you're the free taker for this? But anyways, that was
what happened with the free?
He pulled it wide. But I think I like to have a bit of crack with it. Like, I didn't, I think maybe sometimes I can go over, but if I'm being too serious, I can do kind of stupid things, so I kind of be a bit more lax. But the sledging, I think, is a bit of crack sometimes.
Did you ever get a comment where you're like, oh no, they're right?
I got a comment in the game. It's funny now, and the way I'm sitting out, my angle doing my best, but my hairline. Some of them I burst out laughing. So, like, he was right. Like, I'm doing my very best here. So, I genuinely said, I kind of said to myself, how old are you? Like, we're on about physical appearance. Yeah. But anyway, he was, he's in my black book.
That's hilarious.
What opponent, would be the closest to send like shivers up your spine?
As in marking me?
Yeah,
or just
marking you. Well, first of all, yeah, marking you.
Oh, I've
we go more general then.
I have nightmares of Tom Kniff. So in 2013, it was my starting championship debut.
Yeah.
And I kind of had a good idea Tom Kniff be marking me, and I did a lot of, like, I watched him a lot with Castlebar Mitchells, obviously, and during the game, about 15, 20 minutes in, they're calling him Turbo, and obviously Turbo, you're fast. And I didn't realise. And there was a ball that we both went for, and he just went out by me, and he's as strong as an ox as well. He gave me an unbelievable education. Like, he was, I think he was so underrated. I don't think Mayo people really reference him, but for a period of time there before, I think he got a terrible injury maybe in 2015 or 16, or he kind of filtered away. He was an unbelievable defender, and he gave me a proper eye opener, and it's something that I still remember to this day.
Just like the high performance speak of, you either win or you learn, but like, when you get a game like that that you remember straight away, like you're talking about 2013, are you?
Yeah.
That you can take that with you and improve.
It was just different level in terms of, and he didn't open his mouth the whole game. He wasn't chatting, or he wasn't even to his teammates. He was just doing, he seems like a very quiet lad. Yeah. But that was a real eye-opener in terms of how to get to a certain level. He was unbelievable.
Was there anyone that you thought was going to be quiet who was loud and vice versa?
Mike McKernan, and for Tyrone, we always just kind of mark each other. We always just have a bit of, like, not crack, but there was always a bit of chit-chat and stuff like that. Like, he was a gentleman, you know, but after every sort of play, there was always something from him. And, like, we were both giving it to each other. Like, it was, it wasn't, there was no malice in it or anything like that. He was well able to have a chat, have a bit of crack. But I respect that as well. Like, there's different personalities. Like, I think sometimes you're always seen, especially in the GA, it's us against them, like, you know, no step back and all this nonsense. I kind of like the fact that there was, obviously he's very competitive, but he was cool as well.
A bit of chat. Yeah, Seamus Flanagan said that about, he marked David Clifford in a football match a couple of years ago, and David, or was it Potty?
It was Potty.
And Potty would be, just be there chatting away, like, almost like, oh yeah, how are you getting on? Yeah, good job's going good. Bang, off he goes, sticks one over, comes back. So anyway, just he just continues on like that.
Yeah.
Wayne Rooney did something similar, but I think there was actually mind games. I can't remember who was it who was saying, there, he was marking him in a corner and he was asking him about, like, what film did he see the other day? And then the next thing he just goes, bangs one into the top corner, and then comes back, continues on the conversation.
Who's the most gifted player you played with?
Do you know what, I'm going to go to and say Jack McCarron. I played with him as a fresher in DCU, and out of this world in terms of just football and ability. If he hadn't got the two knee injuries, I genuinely believe he would have been up there, like, near or close to Conor McManus in terms of how good he was. He was just, now Jack's biggest thing was he probably didn't have the pace, but football and ability. Like, I went in as a fresher, and I was probably a year below all those players. Like, I was a bit young going to college, and I'd never met or heard of him before, and just what he could do with the ball. It was just, like, the way he struck the ball as well. Like, even now, we remember his sideline against Derry.
Yeah.
Like, that he's been doing that, and God knows how good he could have been, only for, he got two terrible knee injuries when he was in college. That was the only year I played with him in college.
Yeah.
Because of the injuries, but he definitely sticks out. I think as well, just because, I think James McCarthy played with him in DCU, and he was just one of those. He was just a guarantee every, like, even at training, he was just unbelievable. Just an absolute dog. And he trained like he played, and not much chat out of him in terms of on the pitch. He just do his leading by playing. Just, that was the way he was and the way he is. And I think the way he just conducted himself, I think he was, there was no surprise the way.
On about, you know, like, if Kobe leaves, the mysticism will grow. With James McCarthy, it's like, ever since he retired, people are like, he's one of the greatest players of all time. I was only chatting with him in the local park on Sunday last, and all he wants to do is talk about football like a fan would or a pundit. You know, you'd have no, if out of context, you'd have no idea that you're talking to one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah,
he's so he's a lovely guy and all that. He's great presence about him, but there's nothing that he carries himself like, you should have seen me. Yeah. All he wants to do is talk about what's happening now.
Yeah.
Was that DCU team that you would have come into DCU around that time the most outrageous team that you would have been?
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I think, like, with the time, like, I think for the Sigerson final, I think we might have Michael Murphy on the bench.
Yeah, he did. I'm just looking at the... Were you crazy. In 2012?
2012. I was literally in as an 18. I was just happy to be there. I think I did a tackling square with myself, or a tackling drill or something like that. Myself, Paul Finn and Michael Murphy, and no prize for guessing who the ragdoll was.
Do you want to hear this team? Because this is a mythical DCU team, 2012 Sigerson team. So you've got, in the starting lineup, you've got Philly McMahon, Johnny Cooper, James McCarthy, Paul Flynn, Dean Rock, Owen O'Gara. On the bench, you've got Michael Murphy. 2012 Michael Murphy, who won the All-Ireland
6 months Mayo, later, yeah.
You know, he's on the bench. And I think, was Dean Rock also in that team?
He was. Craig as well.
And Rob Henley as well.
David Kelly, Sligo. At the time was outrageous as well, before he got bad injuries.
Absolutely outrageous.
Some of those Sigerson teams are mental. I remember we had David Hyland in here that day. It was on the day of the Sigerson final. He was just in talking intercounty football, but he named out the team that he was. He was UCD, obviously, and the names are a joke, like an absolute joke. It's like the best player from like the smaller counties, as well as like the best players from the bigger counties too. Like it's just it's a who's who.
An all star team before you get going, like, which
exactly, yeah.
So you're a secondary school teacher.
Yeah.
How much ball is talked from the students? Like
zero.
Oh.
They've no, it's so where I'm, it's in Adamstown. It's not really GA stronghold, is that probably the term to use? It's very much soccer and basketball. A lot of the kids we have, their second generation, so their parents would have emigrated over here in the last 10-15 years. They're all Irish, the kids are all born here. But a couple of the lads now might, some of the lads, one or two might be on the hill on a Sunday.
Right.
But other than that, it's very little chat, which suits me down to the ground.
Even when you played well at the weekend and you want to talk about it, you're like...
I might say to them, lads, what did you do at the weekend? And then I'm waiting for, sir, what did you do? I'll tell you now, I had a match actually.
But I just scored 1-4 there in Cup
Park. But no, ask.
The chat in school is very minimal, even with the staff. Yeah. We have such a big staff. A couple of my mates, close mates, obviously know the crack, but... No, it's great, and I love it that way.
Yeah. Save it for when you come in here, like
exactly.
Yeah, it's like your maths class 1.4, which reminds me, 1.4.
That adds to 7, lads.
Well, my last one for now, before we move on, is: did you have any pre-match routine that you stuck by religiously?
Yeah, my laces, weird one. I would have done my laces 3 times before the game, so I would have done it. Put them on in the dressing room, tied them up, went out. Untie them, tie them up again, and then when on the pitch, the warm up, untie them and tie them again. Always, and then when I'm jumping over, when I'm going onto the pitch, jump over the white line in my right foot. I don't know why. Just a couple of mad, and I never even think about it. And now when I'm saying out loud,
it sounds
like I'm a South American who's been convinced by a witch doctor or something. But no, just those couple of things.
And you're not like OCD vulnerably?
I don't think so. I don't think other people might can answer that for me. I don't think I'm OCD.
Yeah.
I don't.
But
I'm very pernickety with different certain.
See,
things.
I asked that question thinking you probably do have a routine, because most people do, like, especially the best players we talked to, they have something.
Did anyone know that you did that? Like, did anyone pick up or just don't he tie his laces again? Or?
I don't think so. Yeah. I was subtle enough about it.
Yeah.
Or they were like, this fella cannot tie his laces. Someone needs to do it
for offer your hand.
It's a horrible addiction. I was subtle enough about it. Nobody would have thought.
Yeah. Be mad if they actually. We might get a text in now from one of the lads. Maybe Endo will text us. Yeah. Everyone knows.
Yeah,
that's right. It was an internal joke the whole time.
Look at your man.